episode 189 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 28th, 2018. I need a hero! We're back, guys.
Are we going to be singing lots more of our intros? I like it.
Every intro is an 80s song.
I like it.
For as long as we can.
Yes.
Keep this going. Folks, this week we have a good lineup of superhero shows. We have season 2 of Luke Cage, Black Lightning, Cloak and Dagger. We're going to be talking about the first 4 episodes of that. And then we have Westworld. We're going to be talking about the final episode of season 2.
Yes.
It's over.
Yep.
How are we feeling about that?
I was pretty happy with that finale. I'm dying to know where they're going to go. Yeah. Yeah.
We have no new show coming up that we're going to be doing weekly for a little bit.
That's true.
We're going to have to pick something else.
It's actually a relatively quiet couple of months. Like there's some stuff coming. There's big stuff coming up. Glow is coming up. But like there's not a big show coming up that we're going to want to cover. Let's talk about Sharp Objects every week and get more and more depressed.
Oh, man. So I don't know if we discussed this
not
on
really.
Episode with or for you, the listeners. But while we were at ATX Fest, we all got to see the premiere of Sharp Objects, the new show that's going to be on HBO. And we would have discussed this sooner, but I think all of us left this show going, that's depressing.
It's incredibly well done, and I was genuinely unsettled. And not only do I not really want to watch any more of it, but just watching the ads before Westworld, I was like, nope, that's it. Wow, that's a bad show. Like, not a bad show, but like True Detective level skin crawly.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if... I don't want to talk about it weekly. I think you're right on that.
Let's not do that.
No, absolutely not. I'm not watching that weekly.
It's like how I kept trying to get you guys to talk about Leftovers, and I'm like, and everyone's like, okay, we can discuss it, but everyone else is just, I'm not fully as on board.
Grant, what's that crazy show that you're addicted to?
Which one?
Like,
now?
I don't know. One of those reality shows that you were talking about, like it's hundreds of episodes.
Oh, Terrace House?
Terrace House. Let's cover Terrace House every week.
Oh, man. That'd be ridiculous. Folks, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
Les is Skyping in, so if he sounds less than normal, Les.
If I sound weird.
Sounds like Merman over there, then we have a problem. But folks, like I said, we're going to be talking about all those shows. But before we get into that, we have a little bit of house cleaning. First up, we want to say, if you guys like this show and want to support us, there's a couple ways you can do that. Give us a little rating on iTunes, or you can go to patreon.com/TVDudes, make that per episode pledge. That helps us out a lot. You can also support the rest of the shows in our network. We are proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater!
With Les not here.
It's tough. It's hard to harmonize.
You guys are not syncing.
No, sorry.
No, I had the finger over the ear and everything, like...
Getting ready to do it.
Like Eddie Murphy in his Party All the Time video.
What a reference. Next week's episode, Party All the Time. we are part of a proud collective of TV-centric podcasts called Electric Sweater. And if you go to electricsweater.com, you can check out a list of other shows. If we're not just fully scratching that itch of whatever niche TV podcast topic you might want, maybe go check out the other offerings on our network and see if some of the other shows are tackling that.
But make sure you love us the most.
Love us the most.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/TVDudes. And we're going to go ahead and jump into the news because I was a little late in sending the news topics over to Randy. I'm going to have to cover this. So
yeah, I mean, I could guess at them, but it's probably not going to go well.
This is going to be weird. Okay, first up comes... to us, a story about Danny McBride and John Goodman. They're going to be starring in an HBO televangelist comedy. It's going to be called The Righteous Gemstones. This comes from Danny McBride. And, I guess he's going to be collaborating once again with Jody Hill and David Gordon Green, you know, the same people that he worked with on Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals. But McBride, I guess, is going to be doing some of the writing, directing, and executive producing on here. And the let me see if I can get to the premise here. McBride, Eli, who will be John Goodman's character, will be the head of the influential Gemstone Clan. Eli is the face of a global organization of ministries and star of his own television program. McBride will play his son, Jesse, who's next in line to take over the ministries, as it appears his father may be in the twilight of his career as a televangelist.
Let me guess, Danny McBride is going to play an uncouth jackass.
Oh, I'm sure. This sounds completely in the wheelhouse of Danny McBride and Jodie Hill and their sensibilities.
Yep. Some people love their stuff. That they're very. I am not in that target demo. I have hated everything he's done.
I
wish they. I mean, I've liked their stuff. There's some of their stuff that I do like. Like their kind of dark, surreal, like sad clusterfuckness can work for me. But this is. I wish they'd gone differently with the premise. That just sounds really safe. Like, that's exactly what I expected.
I don't know. I find that when they stick in the wheelhouse of the mundane and the, what's it called? Flyover country kind of suburban aspects of the story. If they play in that sandbox and then they're able to push the boundaries of it and go to extremes, it's pretty funny to me. So I don't know. I'm interested in this.
I would prefer McBride not be the fuck up scion that he already be in charge, or like, I don't know. We'll see where they go with the premise of it. Like I said, they've got a 50-50 shot with me on pretty much everything they've done so far. Of like, ooh, I really like that. That didn't work though.
Right, so. Right. The good other aspect is that they do short, really contained kind of. Stories. They keep it pretty tight. I think Eastbound and Down was 3 seasons. Vice Principals was it 2 or 3?
I thought Eastbound and Down was like 5.
Was it really?
Yeah, I think it went a little longer. Now Vice Principals I think it went a little was
while.
3.
Ah.
Yeah, I didn't stick with Eastbound and Down. I didn't watch Vice Principals.
All the episodes, it was like 6 to 8 episodes each season.
Yeah, I guess.
For a half hour show, that seems pretty small. It seems very British almost.
I don't know. It's not British. British would be like 3 episodes every 10 years. And then a Christmas
British.
Special to wrap it all up.
It was a Christmas special. That's it.
Eastbound and Down Christmas special. That'd be foul.
Next story comes to us from, well, I shouldn't say where I'm getting these stories from.
You know where it's from. It's from Screen Rant.
Because Randy's going to rant about it.
I can't make fun of their writing because I'm not reading the stories, but I assume it's terrible.
Halo is getting a live action TV show that's finally been greenlit at Showtime. Did you guys play Halo?
That's a video game, right?
I played a little bit of Halo when a neighbor kid downloaded it for $50 to my Xbox. I'm still a little bitter.
What about you, Les?
No.
Oh, man, I played this all the time. Like, I met friends in college because of playing this game. Like, that was a way to, like, I would walk down the dorm room halls and find other kids that had the door open and they were playing and be like, hey, can I watch? And then, oh, can I play? And then, hey, can I just have your room? Get out of here. I'm really kicking ass. I gotta.
Grant, are you sure that story is about Halo and not like college sex?
Yeah, and then me and my other dudes, we just bone.
I'd come in. I was like, can I watch? Can I play? Can you get out? I'm just saying.
The socks on the door handle. Get a hint. So if you guys have. I mean, I'm sure we've reported on this previously, but Peter Jackson and Neil Blomkamp have been trying to get some project off the ground here for a while. The video game Halo is about this alien invasion in the future, and there's this one like amazing military soldier called Master Chief who uses all these weapons to go and kick ass and fight all these crazy mutant monsters, aliens, and it's this super epic fighting game. Yeah. There's also the famous spinoff from this called Red versus Blue, which basically
I was about to say, isn't there already a really good Halo television show called Red versus Blue that's funny as shit?
Yeah.
Like, I've never played a lick of Halo ever. Like, my college video game experience was the same as yours, except it was GoldenEye, and that's the last time I played video games. But I've seen Red versus Blue, and it was funny as shit. I feel like if they try to make this super serious, it's going to come off as well as Warcraft.
Oh,
I don't know. Here's a little glimmer of hope. Not only is it going to be on Showtime, which I feel is going to be a little bit more of a prestige commitment to the show, the network ordered a 10-episode season, and Kyle Killen, our boy from Lone Star and Awake is actually going to be the showrunner of this.
That is the most mainstream thing Kyle Killen. See, now I'm interested.
Right?
Kyle Killen doing Halo, that's fucking crazy.
Doesn't that make it kind of cool? So
yeah, okay. All right. That's a really cool choice. I'm looking at his IMDb right now, and yeah, that's an interesting choice for that.
It's probably going to be an uncommercial train wreck, but we're going to love it.
Yeah.
Well, and kind of like that it's on Showtime because that gives it some prestige commitment, yeah, similar to HBO. But at the same time, I feel like Showtime will go riskier or weirder or a little more twisted than HBO might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah. You buried the lead there, Grant, because I have no interest in Halo TV show. But until Kyle Killen's involved, then I'm like, yeah.
I only just read about it. I'm reading these news stories on the fly. Next story, brief story. Remember that show Ghosted?
Yes.
It's now officially canceled by Fox.
That show was still on?
Did you know that it wasn't officially canceled previously?
The whole thing just appeared on Hulu. And so I figured it was either just, you know, done for the season or probably done. Because I remember you not being thrilled with it last year at ATX.
Yeah, it was not great.
Grant. No, that first episode was garbage.
Yeah.
And then I had to sit there. I sat in the front row. And the two lead actors.
Craig Robinson and Adam Scott.
Yeah. They come up and sit on the stage and like they're so happy and patting each other on the back. Yeah. And I was just thinking, you guys are in a shitty show.
Yeah. I love both of them. And
I know.
And I kind of liked the premise. But it was so poorly executed.
The pilot I watched. Yeah. That's a great cast for just to not click.
Yeah. All right. One more story for you guys. There is, if you guys remember, Taika Waititi. I hope I'm not butchering his name too much.
That's close.
And
what happened to that guy?
He seems to be doing well. Him and Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords. They are teaming up. Oh, he's also on Legion.
Yep.
They are teaming up for a TV show that's going to be showing in New Zealand, mm-hmm, called Wellington Paranormal. This seems to be a little bit of a spinoff of the mockumentary that they made a year or two ago called What We Do in the Shadows, which was about these vampires that are roommates, and it's kind of awkward situational comedy.
Yeah, this.
Yeah, I think these are the two cops that kind of get glamored, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like they're adjacent to all the supernatural stuff. It's like X-Files if they were beat cops.
Yeah, so it.
In New Zealand.
It looks like a funny premise.
Yep.
That's going to be better than Ghosted.
Yep.
And these beat cops, it almost kind of reminded me of Shaun of the Dead. What's the one he made after that?
Hot Fuzz. Yeah.
Hot Fuzz, where it's like, oh, okay, it's just like small town cops being wanting to be action heroes, but then shit goes sideways because there's paranormal stuff going on.
So all I know is we're going to have to move the show to New Zealand so we can watch this because it premieres in July in New Zealand.
I mean, we'll eventually get it in August and on Netflix or
maybe
something
August
of the next
2019.
Year. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they just don't have U.S. distribution yet.
Yeah.
But it's weird. They got two What We Do in the Shadows shows, spinoffs. So there's an FX one that's going to be in the U.S. and then they're making this one, I guess, just for New Zealand. It sounds like, but surely
and
not.
And then they're also doing the sequel movie.
Yeah.
With what's his name? Reese Darby.
Reese Darby,
which is Werewolves.
Werewolves,
yep.
I love it. I love the whole thing.
Yep.
Oh, everything about it's wonderful.
So, anyway, if you guys want to send us to New Zealand, patreon.com/TVDudes, we will go there and we will watch this show and we'll fly right back.
We're going to run with the hobbits and watch the show.
Alright guys, so we are going to come back in talking in this order of shows. First we're going to start off with Luke Cage, then we're going to jump over to Cloak and Dagger, and then Black Lightning, before wrapping things up with Westworld Season 2, the big finale on HBO. But first up, We're back with Luke Cage. It's the second season of this show. Marvel has learned a lot of their lessons from previous iterations of their Marvel endeavors, and I'm sure they've tightened it up. They have streamlined a story that is really cohesive and really engaging for its I would imagine only like 6 to 8 episodes.
So Grant hasn't watched Luke Cage.
I have not.
No, but I really wish he had, because I gotta say that was the 5 finest episodes. I mean, like for a single 5 episode season, that's the tightest bit of no, I can't even keep it up. I'm 5.5 episodes into 13.
Yeah.
Total for the season.
Yeah.
Is that longer? I didn't look. Is that longer than the previous season?
No, they've always been 13.
Yeah. I feel like that's the one lesson, like the one bit of anything said about Luke Cage that was not fucking praise in season one was that it was slow and a bit long.
Not just Luke Cage. Literally, every Marvel Netflix, including Defenders that was 8 episodes. Everyone has been telling them over and over again, hey, guys, your shows are too long.
Like, if you grabbed the fishbowl and only came out with one fucking suggestion to take, it would be shorter seasons for these. Like, they all seem to have, like, a seam in the at best. I mean, like, I find myself looking back to the golden days where we just had, like, a seam in the plot around episode 7. So far in Luke Cage, like, Bushmaster doesn't seem like he can possibly be the season-long villain out of this.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason for that. And it's because, and this drove me fucking crazy, they keep changing up who the bad guy is in the last like half of the episode. So Bushmaster winds up teaming up with Luke Cage against Mariah. Then Mariah winds up teaming against with Luke Cage against Bushmaster. Then Bushmaster and Mariah are going at each other and Luke Cage is off doing something else. Like, they cannot decide who the bad guy is. They want to do the well-rounded thing, and unfortunately it doesn't work. They're so ashamed of superheroes that they won't acknowledge any of the tropes, which is sometimes you want the bad guys to be bad guys.
Yeah, I get wanting to gut it in reality, but it ends up making it so that at the core of every Marvel Netflix show is a person who does not want to be a hero and does not want these powers.
Yeah.
And finds themselves either like Matt Murdock, like guilt, shame driven about going out and doing this thing every night that he feels like he has to do.
Yeah.
Or Luke, like, reluctantly accepting it. But when he does, it's like every time we jump straight to the shit side of fame, which is interesting. Like, I see why this came up in the writer's room, but it makes for it. Basically, it only works for me on Jessica Jones, and that's because she's hammer drunk with PTSD.
Well, the only Marvel show on Netflix where the hero wants to be the hero is Iron Fist, and that's boring to watch.
Well, because they didn't know what to do with a guy who wanted to be the hero of his story. And so instead they focused on the Meachums for the whole show.
Yeah.
So like I do like the bit when Bushmaster's first introduced that he's like looking at Luke Cage going, no, man, like where he keeps asking, like, so Luke Cage works for the Stokes? And they're like, no, man, he hates them too. and then his people looking at Bushmaster going, but why are you still mad at him? I mean, the enemy of your enemy, right? And he's like, no, it's about a pissing contest. He's made himself the hero of Harlem. I can't have that.
Yeah.
That made sense to me. And I thought that was cool, but I could already see it leading to this, like, Mariah for me is too drunk and unstable from the start.
Yeah.
To have a real plan. Like, you know, she's going to break. Like, you know she's going to be the clusterfuck weak link somewhere in here.
The thing is, I feel like the biggest flaw in Luke Cage is that they have this great cast, and they want to give them all stuff to do, but the characters they're giving them are not worth. Like, Alfre Woodard is a great actress, but Mariah is not worthy of the weight she's given the character. She's not that good of a character.
Like, it's really only Alfre Woodard's, like, acting ability and restraint that keeps her from being a drunk caricature in every scene, because she's asked to hold the same drunk at 10 a.m. tone for every scene I've seen her in so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it in anybody else's hands, I really feel like this would so easily at this point just be histrionics and like chewing the scenery. Bad Tennessee Williams play, you know.
There's so much of the show, because they cannot commit to just making the bad guy the bad guy. So much of the show is plot is all this plotting between her and the romance with her and Shades, and there is no point at which I give a shit about any of it. Like, I just want to fast forward through all of that and get to more of the Luke Cage stuff, which is, again, like you said, in Iron Fist, they focus less on Danny Rand and more on the Meachums. Luke Cage is barely in his own show.
Yeah, and this season I do like what they, like, when he fights and stuff, I've enjoyed it more. Like, there have been some, already there have been some wonderful fight scenes where they really show off his power. I do like how Bushmaster fights.
Yeah, I like that too.
I mean, the only the strong capoeira looking shit, but with the same stuff. Though, it comes down to this core of, like, of embarrassed to, a little bit embarrassed to be a superhero. I get wanting to ground it in reality, but they're using that as an excuse at this point to just not have fun with it. And, like, it's difficult to, I understand wanting to have a show where you constantly tell lessons about, like, Luke wading in and punching the dude who's beating his wife is not exactly an answer.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, I get wanting to show that, but at the same time, it keeps undercutting the fun of a show where the dude's in fights. And there's a finer line to walk there that they're not finding for me so far quite. It's just not, like, it seems like every time we have a fight scene, I get wanting to tell the backside of it that, like, Luke ends up, you know, in court over this shit half the time. Well, but
I'm also frustrated because they keep, it's so scattershot. There's a whole episode that is focused on Bushmaster's origin later in the run, and it's convoluted, and I don't give a shit. There's all this stuff going on with, like, the crime of Harlem, and it leads into sort of the finale of the run, and I don't care about any of it. And the only thing I care about, like, in episode 3, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing get together in a bar, and Colleen gives Misty sort of some tough love, and that whole scene, I would watch the whole season of that show. That's the show I want. I want the Nightwing investigations. I want those two, A Daughter of the Dragon. And we all want that. And Marvel is so bad at giving us what we want.
I do. I mean, at least Misty finally gets the damn arm.
Yeah.
But I'd heard about the Daughters of the Dragon, that there was a tease Daughters of the Dragons episode, and it warms up for me, but I still, like, at the start of that episode, I found myself going, like, there's a couple of examples in the writing in that episode, particularly where somebody's character says, you know, you don't understand what it feels like to blah, blah, blah. And the other person, it's exactly what has happened to them. And so they get a very, like, spike it back at you, like, oh, I don't. And it's because they teed it up. Like,
yeah.
It's because you made a twisted, like, contorted metaphor of, you don't understand what it's like to lose a part of you. Like, no, man, we were just talking about jobs, and you're standing in front of a person with their arm missing.
Yeah.
And part of you is a weird place to go with it right now.
Yeah.
That kind of perfect, like, they would not have this comeback if you had not set up an inappropriate metaphor. And it happens like three times in the course of that episode where somebody just tees up the perfect thing where I'm like, it's not out of character or egregious. It's not super weird, but it's still a little melodramatic. And Misty got so many, I'm a cop, let me cop this situation with my cop words, and we're going to put the perp over there and cop this and cop that. I'm too old for this shit. Like, that was most of Misty's dialogue last season. And so despite loving the character and what the actress is bringing to it and wanting to see where, I mean, I know who Misty Knight is in the comics and where this goes, like, it's been better this season, but it still was a little frustrating that, like, the writing on her is still a little schlocky for me.
Yeah. There's also one episode you haven't seen yet, Les, which is episode 10, where Danny Rand shows up to team up with Cage and go after Bushmaster. And that is there's a Power Man and Iron Fist reference. I should have loved that episode. And they did course correct a little bit on Iron Fist. He's a little bit more interesting as a character, but they still just can't let it be what we all want it to be. Like, just let Danny have his costume. Let him be the Iron Fist. Let him be a little more zen. He's a little too dude bro. And and you know, let the two of these guys decide to work together. It's like, it's cruel teasing. Like, we get this one episode three where we see Colleen and Misty, and it works, and the chemistry's there, and I'm like, yeah, more of that. And then we never see it again. Colleen does not show up again for a single minute the rest of Power of Luke Cage.
Oh, go ahead.
Same thing with Iron Fist. He's in one episode. We don't see any more of him. And same thing with, honestly, Claire Temple, which is one of the better parts of all the Marvel shows. She and Luke have a falling out, and it's a great scene between the two. Like, it is well-written, well-acted, very good, but it takes it to a place where we never see Claire Temple again, and I miss that character. I miss that story. Like, it was the story they gave us instead, I didn't care about.
I feel like it's not – I mean, it's not like a – I don't think there's somebody like nefariously wringing their hands at Marvel Netflix going, this will piss the fans off. Though some of the decisions are like, how easy is it to hit the bullseye on this, for God's sake?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think it's deliberate. I think it's that they don't know what the hell they're doing.
I feel like there was a decision made early on of where the pacing and like amount of Easter egg, like there was a ratio decision made. And I feel like somebody's gut was just wrong on what the audience could handle. Like, I mean, I feel like every superhero show, most superhero shows we've ever gotten on TV, I feel like underappreciate how much fantastical shit the audience can take.
Yeah, well,
in a number of episodes, and so they like spend an episode going, she can move things with her mind. Oh my God, what could it be? And in episode five, someone finally says she's telekinetic, and like for the rest of us, we said for four episodes going, she's telekinetic, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, this leads to a question that Nick Tice had for us. Nick Tice,
which
is Tice. It's Nick Tice.
Tice.
He said, hey, dudes, so I'm watching Ep 5 of Luke Cage Season 2, and I find myself very excited to see what will be in the box Luke is given and told must be worn at the party he's being paid to attend. Will it be the tiara from last season, the bracelets, a chain or belt buckle with the word Luke on it? I then remember, as is revealed to be a hoodie with bullet holes in it. That's right, silly me. I forgot Netflix is inherently embarrassed they are making a superhero show. And they aren't the only ones. Hey, CW, if you want me to care about a legion of superheroes, maybe have more than three of them, and maybe make sure that two of them aren't a blue Brainiac 5 that can't fight and fucking Mon-El again. I guess my question is, why are superhero shows suddenly so bad at pandering to me?
I don't understand why Brainiac was blue. I still don't.
Nail on the head. That's exactly what it is. It's not that they're doing wrong. It's that's not what the audience that they're courting wants.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it comes from a couple different directions. I think that if you look at how Marvel Cinematic has catered to the audience,
yes,
they've done a great job of keeping things relatively believable within that universe and grounding everything. But you look at what, if we go back further, what Christopher Nolan did, he kept things really realistic. Like, there wasn't anything, like, too over-the-top absurd. Yeah, he's wearing a costume, but he got it from a military armament. He added some theatrics to it because he wanted to be a little bit more of an iconic, like, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Like, so it felt like when people saw these films and they moved away from what Schumacher was doing with Batman and even, you know, to some extent, what's his name? Tim Burton was doing with the earlier Batman movies, that they were trying to make these grounded. I think a lot of the producers that are financing these things said, we need these to be believable. We need to get rid of the silly aspects. Or if we do little nods to it, that's okay. But for the most part, we want this to be edgier, grounded.
That's kind of wrong. Material. That's 100% wrong.
And, well, I mean, they were doing that with the Marvel TV properties.
Yes, and it's also
it's
wrong
for them to do it.
I mean, I like the Chris Nolan Batman movies, and I don't necessarily want that in everything, but I definitely, when Daredevil came out, I felt like they were going for a Nolan Batman.
Yeah.
But Marvel's, you know, style, and it was like, okay, this could be a cool hair to split, but there's got to be some better gray area between nipples on the bat suit and me arguing about whether or not that's actually red in the Daredevil costume or not, or if it's like just super dark purple or what,
right?
And like, you can go ahead and commit to like a full color. It's it seems like Marvel's way of like grounding towards Nolan films kind of ended up landing them in the Snyderverse a little bit in the Netflix series. Like,
yeah, here's
it's turned a little Murderverse-y, and I want them to have more fun with it. Luke Cage's color scheme is definitely better than Daredevil's, but
yeah, but look, I mean, look at what happened to the DC Extended Universe in the movies. The reason that the Nolan Batman movies work as arguably a trilogy, I guess, if you don't hate the third one like I do. I don't love the Nolan Batman movies, but I will agree that they work for what they are. But you can't build a cinematic universe around it.
They're self-contained.
And that's what they're trying to do on Netflix. They're trying to build a TV-sized cinematic universe. And you can't – Daredevil worked fine. But as we increasingly saw, oh, this is the only speed you have, it becomes less and less interesting.
Yeah, it does seem like everyone else based their template on the initial success of Daredevil.
Yeah.
And Daredevil was that gritty street crime drama, and they wanted to mimic that tone with all the other shows, and that's kind of a misstep.
There needs to be a little bit more flavor. I mean, they did pick all street level, like Jessica Jones and Iron Fist and Luke Cage can all work as that sort of gritty street level. But you've got to throw in the flair. Like in Daredevil, they still did the radar sense and all that kind of thing. In Iron Fist, you got to have the kung fu. You got to have the costumes. Like it's
well, that's the thing. So they both like CW has like started with Arrow, which was their dark Batman and analog, and Marvel Netflix started with Daredevil, and then they tried to build this Daredevil verse and kind of Arrowverse out around. But Marvel Netflix. I'm not saying everything the CW's done's worked. They're definitely still a little bit like, how can you not hit the nail on the head on some of this shit?
Sure.
But Marvel Netflix does not have its Legends of Tomorrow. Like they don't have their Arrow to wacky.
They embrace the wackiness. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no wacky, like if anything, they were just never going to do it in a million years, but I really wish they had gotten somebody with a really tripped out sense of humor to keep it grounded, but made Iron Fist the sheer goofiness that it kind of has with Danny walking around spouting this shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like lean into it and be like, if he'd basically, I mean, like if I'm going to butcher his name, Taiki Waititi had, if he'd gotten to do it, it would have been like Danny walking around like a startled New Zealander, just spouting mystic shit. People like, I mean, it'd have been like watching Chancey Gardner kick ass. It'd have been awesome.
I think if Patton Oswalt was in the Jeff Loeb position, we'd have a very different Marvel universe.
Right.
You need someone who knows all this shit and who isn't gonna like just do fanboyish stuff, but who knows what the fanboys want. There's something to be said for giving us what we want. Jonathan Heitmichael has also had a question. He says, "Hi dudes. It's been hard for me to get back on Marvel Netflix after Iron Fist and The Defenders.
Me too.
The reviews I've heard for seasons 2 for Jessica Jones and Luke Cage have been okay. Do you dudes recommend skipping episodes since 13 episode seasons of the new 22 episode season? If so, which ones?" And my answer to that is
all of them.
Watch episode 3, and if you want, just watch the Misty Knight and Colleen Wing stuff. Watch, I think episode 5 is where she gets the arm. Is that right?
Yes.
Watch that episode. And then jump to episode 10 for the Power Man and Iron Fist. Even though it's disappointing, it's a solid episode. And then watch episode 13 to see how it all wraps.
4 episodes. I could do that even.
Yeah, those are the episodes I would watch. Honestly, if you cut this show down, you could. There was enough scenes and enough.
You've got the time, I'd throw in the very first episode. It's a little slow, but it reminds you of where everybody is, and there's a couple of fun fights.
Yeah.
So 1, 3, 5, 10, 13.
Yeah, and honestly, there's stuff I'd count of all that. You could have made Luke Cage, and this is the biggest failure of Marvel Netflix. Luke Cage could have been a successful 2.5 hour movie, if they'd cut this all together. They could have made a 2.5 hour movie that worked, and that is not what you're supposed to be doing with your TV time. Like, don't give me what the Marvel Cinematic Universe version would be. Give me something that makes use of the time it has. That if you're going to do 13 episodes, give me 13 episodes of story, not 6 or 2.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and move on from here to talk a little bit about Cloak and Dagger. So this 4 episodes are out so far. Maybe the 5th one just came out.
No. So I would say that my only issue really with Cloak and Dagger at this point is, again, pacing of superhero shows.
It's so slow.
It's
so
very
slow.
And it's not for lack of introducing some power, like some power type stuff. Like they each have flashes of their power happen where weird, you know, where it's happening to. I get the, I get what they're doing with letting them have their own story that establishes just trust that your writing staff and your actors and me as a viewer can really get it. And you can drive it home in an hour to me.
Yeah.
They could have got me to at least the end of episode three. I feel like an hour one.
This is a really, it's a really slow show. It's really well done. Like for a freeform show, I've been fairly impressed with the acting. I think both the young leads are really good. I think all the supporting cast is good.
Yeah, I've liked everybody that's turned up so far. I've been really,
The issue I have is that Cloak and Dagger is a very over the top but simple premise of like two runaways given powers by drugs who have to rely on each other because they are tied together by darkness and light, and they've overcomplicated the fuck out of it. So
yeah, it's Tandy, by not having them directly dependent on each other like in the comics, they I feel like they feel they need to give me this episode after episode of why kids are tied together, and of course it has to do with Roxanne and an accident, and they're two separate backstories, but they've given me a season worth of story that the comic set up in one premise.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good nuance, a lot of character development, that kind of thing, and that's great. The problem is, I'm not sure Cloak and Dagger needs it. I honestly just kind of want them to go fight drug dealers.
I like some of the change to it. I do like that. I like that they kind of roll, reverse, flip. Like in the comic, it's a very much a product of the 80s has a very drug special feel. But Tandy's obviously the good girl, and Tyrone has problems. Is from the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
And then they both, I believe, get like a, it's a very like iZombie start. Like they get a bad batch of a party drug and end up with superpowers or something.
Yeah. And I think that you've hit the nail on the head as to why they would make these changes. It's kind of like Runaways. It was kind of its time, and there was things you could change.
It's like not putting Storm back in the Mohawk in the 80s leather. Like I get why you might keep a plot line, but ditch some of this. But it also meant that when their powers manifested in the comic, they were almost addictively, not so much Dagger, but Cloak, his power would straight eat him.
Yeah.
A lot. Like if he didn't continue to feed it, it's like Aubrey or Audrey 2 in Little Shop of Horrors. Like if you don't keep feeding it, it's going to eat you.
And Dagger can feed it with her light. Yeah, that's why they're a symbiotic. And it's too bad that that's gone. Also, it's called Cloak and Dagger, and we've seen the daggers, but the cloak doesn't even show up till episode four. I liked it being part of his powers.
I see how they're doing his power the same. Sure. Like they're trying to do an opposite thing from her, but I was with you. I honestly was just so glad at this point after watching Luke just be in hoodies on Luke Cage. I was so happy that the cloak, they granted to justify it, they spend 30 minutes explaining to me like bead costuming tradition.
Yeah.
But at least we get like the cloak from the comics.
I was kind of glad to see all that because I loved all that from Treme. So it was like, oh, Treme, I remember all this stuff, which was kind of neat.
I just sat there and was just like, and okay, we're going to spend time explaining it, but at least it might pay off in like, oh, cool, you guys actually made the cloak. Nice.
I also think the thing that I miss is that Tyrone is very confident, and I mean the role reversal stuff, but in the comics, Tyrone was sort of a soft-spoken kid who had some problems as far as like he was shy and didn't really know how to talk to girls and that kind of thing. And to make him this guy who's a little more confident, and then Tandy is also this sort of sassy streetwise girl, they're too alike.
Yeah, it's that they're now a little too alike. Like Tandy had confidence, but of course she had secret problems she couldn't tell the world.
Right.
But I thought making Tyrone a confident kind of jock kid, but him seeing fears because the cloak, like when he touches people, he kind of gets a psychic look at their deepest fear.
Yeah.
That would be a cool contrast, but it really works better in the comics that he's this shy, soft-spoken kid who's really nothing but love, like, and just doesn't know how to connect, and now has this just never-ending pit inside him.
Yeah.
And that Tandy was, like, it kind of heightened the unfairness of Tandy just being light. That tension kind of, they're a symbiotic relationship, but it's almost more parasitic. The cloak needs her more than she needs Tyrone.
Right,
like it, the unfairness of it made more of a, it's, the show is starting to already kind of highlight like things I didn't notice were working in the comic because we're kind of buried under some
right.
80s drug.
Yeah, that's the thing. I get why they made the changes. And it's not that this is a bad show. This is a very well done show.
No, everybody in it's really killing it too. I like both. I can't think of their names, but both young actors are doing really good work.
But I'm missing.
And I like how the powers look. But
I'm missing the stuff that worked about the comic. And I do wonder if ultimately it's going to come to anything. It's only 10 episodes. We're 4 episodes in. I'm going to give it a few more. I'm definitely going to keep watching.
The pacing thing is really, it bothers me because it's not about this show. I don't know why every superhero show seems to be just stunningly slow paced.
Yeah, all of them. Or if not, they have 22 episode seasons and it's too long. Like, no one seems to understand the pacing of a superhero show yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least we'll keep trying and keep getting more of them. So cool.
Well, speaking of other superhero shows and their pacing, the second season of Black Lightning just concluded. Do you guys feel like this one worked out a little bit more successfully?
Did you finish watching this, Les?
I did. I liked Black Lightning quite a bit. And it had one moment, maybe episode 3 or 4, where I missed a week and it hadn't quite hooked me enough and it almost slipped my radar of like, oh yeah, we were watching Black Lightning. But I really enjoyed it. The episode titles are, I mean, they are 90s rock band pretentious. Like, they're really bad.
And then the devil brought the plague, the Book of Green Light.
Yeah, volume 8. Like,
that's an actual title from episode 5. That's the actual title of episode 5.
Oh, wow. I just thought you were riffing on them.
Really, that's the actual title of episode 5.
But I like the villains. Jill Scott. And the guy that plays Tobias Whale is great.
Oh, yeah. He's a fantastic bad guy.
I kind of like their central plot line is this drug Greenlight that you start to figure out, or they start to figure out what it's doing is giving people like a low grade superpowers, but in like a PCP crazy kind of way.
Right.
And but the superpower seems to have a signature that mimics Black Lightning a little bit.
How amazing would it be if it turned out to be like Green Lantern? If it was like Green Lantern based power.
That's what I was sitting there going, if they say Miraclo at some point, I will flip the fuck out. But I like how they bring in their Roxxanne type thing and what's going on in this town and how that ties into Black Lightning's origin. They spend a little too much time with Gambi, his helper.
Yeah, but that's James Remar. You can't not use Remar.
I mean, they spend a little too much time with him in the wilderness on the betrayal.
Agreed.
It almost went an episode too far where I was like, oh, you got to bring him back. But they used the whole family really well, because even the time when Gambi's in the wilderness, the daughters are still talking to him.
Yeah.
They may not want to, but like there's enough they did a superhero family team in a way I just haven't seen on television before.
The family relationships here are really fantastic. Both his daughters are great. And I love that they gave them the powers too, that they went ahead and brought those characters in. And also,
they really screw around. They get their powers pretty quick.
Yeah. And the relationship between him and his ex-wife is one of the most mature divorced couples I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, I honestly, at the start of the season, I was a little I just wanted to lose it, or of like, he's not addicted to his fucking powers. He's saving people's lives. But you can see where she's coming from. And when they grew the flashbacks of like when she called it quits, like it makes sense of like, what if our daughters find you like this? Honestly, I don't think this one had. I don't think this suffered from the pacing problems that bothered me about some of the others quite as much.
This one's really good. I actually have not finished it just because I fell off. I just haven't had time. Now it's on Netflix. I'll definitely wrap up. But I got through episode 7, and
how many total are there?
Is it a 10 or a 13? It's a 13. Which on the CW, the CW is usually 22. So they did.
I was about to say, It's like a half season. Yeah,
yeah, they did learn their lesson. Also, when they first announced this, I was kind of nervous as to why they weren't putting it in the universe with Flash and Green Arrow and all that kind of stuff. But it makes total sense. This is a it is the more grounded and realistic in some ways. It's got some more to say about race and race and police relations and that kind of thing. And it does it in a way that doesn't make me think, just don't stop being so realistic. They do it well.
I really think their cop dialogue and stuff is better than what comes out of like Misty and Bailey's mouths half the time.
I agree.
I like the writing on this CW show almost as well as what I'm getting off of Marvel Netflix, and that's just not what I expected. I will say we didn't talk about the music on Luke Cage, which like season one is phenomenal.
Yeah, the music's
like
great.
You want to look up who's playing in almost every scene in Harlem Paradise.
That said, every time they did the music in the club, though, I was like, just get to the story.
Yeah, because I didn't need a breather.
Yeah.
But similarly, I kept trying to figure out, like, man, are these original? Like, where are you guys getting some of these cuts from?
Yeah.
For Black Lightning, like, they make a good use of what I know is a limited CW music budget. Like, Supernatural's got to be sucking a lot of music budget out of some classic rock payout. And, but Black Lightning makes some great use of some music. I wish his current, like his updated costume, I wish the lightning stripes didn't look quite so marshmallowy.
Yeah, agreed. But it's solid. But, it's solid enough.
And his costume has an explanation.
Yeah.
Like, I love that they straight up explain at one point in the season that, like, without that, using his powers overwhelms his own nervous system.
Yeah.
Like, he shorts himself out. And has to have that costume where like things go really wrong.
I would definitely. I mean, if I was saying I would say Black Lightning is the best superhero show on TV right now. I don't think anything else comes close. Well,
Legion.
Unless you count Legion, which I don't count as a superhero show.
Yeah, no, Legion's closer to Westworld.
Legion's in a class of its own.
All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and jump over to talking about Westworld finally, because the finale came out and. I'm not sure any of us would have predicted what actually happened.
No.
Like, I think, first off, I'm going to say, we're going to go into some spoilers here. So.
Yes. So all the robots are humans and all the humans are robots now. It's complete.
I mean, Les, you had speculated previously about, you know, we don't know who's actually a robot and who isn't. And to an extent, that came into play here. But this episode, I think, opened up the world of possibilities in such a more grandiose way than I was anticipating. I thought we were going to stay on the island. I thought we were going to see some of the other worlds of Westworld, land of Delos or whatever it's called. What'd you guys think?
I was watching this just enraptured and in love with the show. And I still, as I watched it, like, I'm like, I don't think I know what's going on, but I'm really enjoying this ride. And I hope it'll all be clear by the end.
When the helicopter pulled back and you realize the park is an island and then the island disappeared, I lost my shit.
You watched the
wrong episode.
That's
a different show.
Yeah, it's a different show. There was no polar bears in Westworld. There were angry buffalo.
That was a worse show. That was a better show, I mean.
We know what the Freudian sleep meant.
I really enjoyed the shit out of the final. Was it hour and a half long?
Yeah, it was an hour and a half long
episode. I liked getting a reason for Bernard's de-indexed memories.
Oh yeah,
and therefore why him being our main narrator and proxy, why like it was a nice like. Narrative explanation for like why you got these things out of order.
Yeah. I like that too.
Why everything is disjointed and similar to how things were misleading in the first season from Dolores's perspective, because we're out of sync in timelines. We suspected we're seeing things out of sync, but once they all start to coalesce and you get a clear picture, it's interesting how at the end of each season we suddenly start getting all the pieces put together and we realize and we can go back through our, you know, shitty memory of of how this episode or how the season played out and start trying to go, oh, this is what they were trying to do. Like,
yeah,
It's one of those shows that you could go back and rewatch and suddenly get it a lot better.
I watched the season finale and then 2 days later watched it again with Lisa, and even rewatching it, like just a second watch, was still captivating. Like, it's a gorgeous show, and then the season finale had some great, like, fuck yeah moments. Mm-hmm. But was wonderful also just to put together and anticipate and start like, okay, so here's Bernard now. Okay, this costume looks like that. So I think we're here. Okay, so then this means that hasn't happened. Like,
wow, you were like placing them in the context of their costume and what timeline it might be.
Did you ever watch, we were talking about Christopher Nolan earlier, did you ever watch The Following?
No.
Or not the TV show,
but Following, yeah, one of his early ones, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like Memento, it's out of time sequence, the entire movie's out of time sequence, and basically the only way you know it's where you are is how beat up this dude is, because a lot of people keep kicking his ass, and so yeah, it kind of stuck with me now of like whenever stuff starts to jumble up, like, I start to pay attention to, like, oh, Dolores has the gun belt. That's Wyatt Dolores, versus the opening scene. Is this now of the season finale? That's from the end. That's the world.
I read this sentence on Reddit that I feel sums up to some extent how ambitious this show is and how crazy it is and what we were supposed to be able to figure out along the way. And this is all just based on the relationship of Dolores and Arnold. The sentence is, or Bernard rather. So Arnold created Dolores, who killed Arnold. And then Dolores recreated Arnold as Bernard, who then killed Dolores. And then recreated Dolores as Hulloris, who then killed Bernard. And then recreated Bernard and the original Dolores. That's all what happened. A lot of that was explained in this episode, and I feel like in a crazy way, with what all the crazy stuff that's happening in this episode, this was one of the more clear episodes. This one in the Ateshka episode,
yeah,
a couple episodes back.
Now remind me who Dolores wound up in the body of.
Hale,
that's right. Well, that was a great reveal.
There are two Doloreses now.
Yeah.
So she's at least split. At least.
What I love about that is it gives Tessa Thompson a new character to play.
Yes, but there's Hull Dolores, and then there's Dolores.
Yeah.
And I love her explanation of like, were I human, I wouldn't have brought you back. You're definitely my enemy. But for like, you can almost see the Star Trek, like, it's more logical. Our people have a higher percentage chance of survival if both of us survive, even though you're going to work against me.
Yeah. I don't, the great thing is I don't know where season 3 goes from here. I have no idea.
I don't either.
And I love that. It's just like season 2. Like, I don't actually know what season 2 is going to look like. And then we got it and I was super happy. I'm excited by not knowing where they're going with it.
It's like Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Yeah.
It's going to be Westworld season 3. Lost in New York.
So you think Trump's going to be in it?
Probably.
I'd say, so it's going to Trump Tower. I
would love an army of killer robots to go to Trump Tower, for the record.
I love that this show does a wonderful job of setting up sci-fi premises that take a moment to sink in, and so that part of the reveal of what's happening is that you had not considered the implications of what was happening. So in season 1, when it suddenly occurred to you, these could be grossly different timelines because most of these characters don't age.
Yeah.
And it took several episodes before it clicked of like, this could be 30 years apart and Dolores would look the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that shit, it is. I'm watching it at least two vastly different decades, different timelines. And this season, realizing what it's been bothering me since this whole season, what is the Man in Black's anger against the park and motivation? Like, what's the core void in him he's been trying to fill, and it finally clicked. Like, he's always felt more at home in the park. Like, he wants to be a host a little bit, but he can't be, and they're fake, and that phobic, like, hate what you want internalized anger is exactly the level of like wrongness in him, so that when you arrive at the point of the stinger at the end of this finale, there's an almost like a rueful smile on his face, like when he first walks in and like, I'm already in the thing, aren't I? Fuck.
So they also point out in that after the post-credits stinger, that it takes place in the far, far future.
Mm-hmm.
So this is
exactly.
An established robo world, I guess.
There's been a joke thing going around that like next sequel to Jurassic World is the dinosaurs in the far future, and they're trying to bring back mankind, and they find a DNA in an amber, and they bring back Goldblum.
Perfect.
And like all I was thinking was like, so we're far enough in the future that the robots have fucked things up, and they want to bring back a human, and they brought back Ed Harris.
Right. So I had a question about one particular aspect. We see Bernard talking with Ford, and you know, he's asking Ford for guidance, and you get to see Anthony Hopkins once again like come in and help help Bernard through a tough situation. And then we get the reveal that he's not actually there, that Bernard was successful in deleting him, but Bernard was able to retain an element of him. And in a way, this is one of the more human aspects of Bernard, that he was able to talk to an imaginary friend that he conjured up in order to work out and process some issues, right? Mm-hmm. My question, though, is were we supposed to take the interaction between the Liam Hemsworth, the younger Hemsworth,
yeah,
and Hale, who's Hale Loras, I guess,
yeah,
when Hale's now Dolores, was that supposed to be that Ford is now living in that guy's body?
No, I think that guy knows. He knows she's a robot, and he just lets her pass. Yeah,
yeah, no. I think Ashley's human.
He's human. Yeah,
because what's his last name? I think his book was in
real life. It's Hemsworth.
Yes. No, but I mean, I think his book was one in the library, but either way, I think he's human. And, I would be absolutely shocked if he somehow.
I'm pretty sure it's human.
But no, I think that interaction was just basically him saying, no, I know Hale, you know, the old man hired me so long ago that like, I can tell you're not you.
Right.
Yeah.
But I like he has to know who he's talking to. Like, I feel like made an educated guess that not only are you not Hale, you're Dolores.
Yeah.
And his speech about loyalty, I feel like was particular to her.
Yeah, I agree.
Of like, I'm going to let you pass. And because the person I really work for is the same person who really isn't. I work for Ford. Ford isn't this park. Ford is what set your whole path up.
Right. Yeah.
So am I with you or am I with the park? Because wouldn't it be the same? I mean, if I'm really with Ford, I'm really with you, right? I kind of felt like that was what his speech was.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So we have this magical Eden, which I also read people describe as a Windows XP background that all the robots get to run through, and it's a digital paradise for them to escape from the real world.
Right.
And their digital counterpart to kind of still walk around in an avatar, you know, sandbox. And then we have other characters that didn't make it into there and died. And I guess what I'm curious about is, are people like Maeve gone?
I think Maeve is gone. I think that was her heroic sacrifice. You don't think so?
Maeve's,
but Felix.
No, did Felix and Sylvester have her on a pile?
Yeah, they pick her up. They probably go to her
first.
So
they're going to save Maeve.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought.
Like, do you think you idiots can handle that? And they look over and Maeve is laying on the pile. And that means that no one talking to them, like, you idiots, go deal with that pile of bodies. None of those people clearly know who the fuck Maeve is, or they would pull her special coated ass off that pile because she's as dangerous as Clementine still.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I want to say, I loved Clementine. I love the pale horse, the pale rider.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was so well done. They're gonna bring
Maeve back.
Okay.
Maeve's gonna wake up with Felix and Sylvester, but this much deeper into Dolores' world.
Hmm.
I didn't buy the guy who was the game designer sacrificing himself.
That felt, it was a little weird.
That felt forced.
That was weird.
For a guy.
Like, dude, you know you're really going to get shot, like legit shot.
Yeah, and I was like, at no point does he need to. All you need to do is delay a little bit so they can get a head start.
Yeah.
You kind of did it. And then you didn't have to get shot right there. You could have just been like, all right, I give up.
Yeah.
And instead he died for the drama of the show.
Yeah.
I loved him. Him dying was too far of like, hey, dude. Yeah, all you had to do was just delay, right? I mean, because that's all he did by dying was just delay.
Yeah.
Right. And so
it's not like his death actually stopped them.
I would imagine that Dolores, living in the real world now in Arnold's old house, that she would be able to figure out some way to access the digital files of the characters slash identities there now in the digital Valhalla or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I think it's gone. I think it's legit gone.
Oh, really? You don't think that she'll be able to like reconstruct those characters and take the data and just like put it into those people into the real world?
I don't think so. I'd be willing to bet that those are actually the only real dead, and partly because she hated their choice. I thought it was an incredibly human moment of Dolores to stand there and decide that your choice is stupid, and I am going to destroy your stupid. You chose wrong.
Yeah.
Like, because she hates that they're running to another counterfeit world, and then she decides to change her mind and she puts Teddy there. And sends them off to, I assume, like a, whatever satellite's looping around or Cassini or some shit. But the way she says it, of like, no, I'm sending somewhere where there's not a back.
Well, do you think that like, someone else would do it then? If you think it's like a philosophical choice about Dolores, could Bernard theoretically? You think he might narratively want to bring back? You know, because of the actors, the cast, they might want to bring them back into the storyline.
No, I mean, it's television. If somebody's if somebody makes a deal to come back, they'll, you know, justify whatever they need to bring them back. But it seems like the way I took it, she deleted host data. Other than like all the host data was sent and is no longer on a server where the park people can have it, because they would just re-enslave everybody back into bodies. Which Dolores wouldn't want, but she's kind of left them off to their shitty counterfeit world. But the ones that she saved were in her handbag.
Right, right, right.
Like she had a handful there. Like we know one of them is got to be William.
Oh.
And one of them is
Teddy.
And one of them's Bernard.
She didn't have Teddy. Yes.
Teddy's in Valhalla.
That's right, man. So that's quite a big move to kill off a lot of your cast. I wonder if, you know, looking at the numbers that Westworld has been getting, like this hasn't been as big of a commercial success as Game of Thrones.
Right.
And you have to wonder, like, how can they invest this much in a Western town and keep filming there? Like, the problem with Deadwood was that it was just way too expensive and they couldn't have commercial appeal to try and also supplement the cost, right?
Same with Rome.
And
their fake set for Rome, and, well, it also ironically burnt, but the sets for Rome were fucked up expensive.
Do you suppose someone was fiddling while that was burning?
Right.
Maybe part of the big pitch, though, was like, hey, you guys give us one more season of this, and our intent is to bring this world into the real world where you will be able to do that marketing. We'll be able to cut costs, and we're going to kill off a lot of the cast. So any concerns you guys have about the budget are going to disappear in the third season, and we're still going to keep the audience captivated that we have.
I don't think so. I think that probably that this is a prestige show for HBO. It may not have like the super huge ratings, but there are definitely people who are subscribing to HBO for Westworld, and that's all they really need. And I do think it's bigger than either Rome or Deadwood were. Both of those were critics' darlings,
right.
But they were not like genre blockbusters. And I feel like Westworld is, even if though the reaction is a little bit split, it is a show that people are talking about. It's a buzz show, and that's what HBO wants. I think they're probably perfectly happy to throw money at this.
Having said all that about cast being like which cast I think are dead or in Valhalla or aren't coming back or whatever, this is a show that works in multiple timelines, works with memories where some are actual memories, some are viewing memories, like a that you can't interact with. It does all sorts of weird shit. Plus, if they were going to figure out a way to bring back anybody to screw with Dolores, I bet the humans bring back Teddy.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I got...
So I can see James Marsden coming back, or maybe even Ford haunting her, like Teddy haunting her.
Yeah, presumably they still have the files for, like, how to build his body in the system, right? We have a couple questions from our listeners. First up, Michael Gastini says, Westworld spoilers up. Hey, dudes, am I the only one who doesn't want to see Westworld Season 3? I feel like the finale did a great job concluding the major plot points and character arcs, and I don't want to see a potential third season ruining it. What will Season 3 even look like? Will it even take place inside Westworld or in the mainland? Will they completely overhaul the cast or bring back all the characters that appear to definitively die / crossover? I trust the writers, but I felt like I already got a complete story, and I don't really feel like I need a sequel. Anyway, looking forward to your thoughts on the finale.
I completely disagree.
Yeah, I do feel like this was a... If it didn't get a third season, if this were a network show and they said, fuck you, we're not paying for a third season, I would feel really good about where it ended. But enough shows just end that I am overjoyed at getting more of this.
Right. I agree in so much as there is something precious about how great this season ended and how it encapsulates kind of the narrative arc that started in the beginning of the first season of them pushing to escape and now they've escaped. Like, this could end here and I would be to some extent satisfied, but they also left enough narrative threads in there that I definitely do want to see where things kind of go from here, because they've constructed a world that is fascinating, and the way they tell their stories in this show, the creators behind this, I think this is doing stuff that most other shows can't even get close to trying to achieve. And yeah, I want more of this.
Yeah, I also, I don't feel like this is a complete story. Like, if this had been it, I'd have been relatively happy. But we're right in the middle of this story. The story is not about Westworld. The story is about the birth of artificial intelligence, and we are nowhere near the end of it.
Well,
just because they did an amazing job of telling me the life of Archduke Franz Ferdinand and got all the way to his assassination, and that was an amazing season finale. World War One is what happens next.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, that's a great metaphor. That's exactly it. It's like, it's not that what went before wasn't great. It's that I want to see what happens next.
Honestly, I should applaud twice as hard that they made the fucking preamble this good.
Yeah,
right.
That I cared enough about it that I'm like, yeah, you know what? You don't even need to show me the actual war movie.
Alex Mitchell says, what is the most overrated show on TV right now? For me, it's Westworld. Thin characterizations and an overcomplicated storytelling structure designed to appeal to people on
Read the room,
Reddit,
buddy.
Obsessed with solving its mysteries and overanalyzing every episode just to understand the inevitable twists. Every character speaks in vague riddles, and I don't understand most of their motivations, and it feels like it takes forever for anything to happen because we've gotten to spend so much time messing with the multiple timelines and dragging out the mystery. I still enjoy it for the acting, action, and style, but I think it would be better if it was told its story in a more straightforward way and stopped trying to keep everything hidden from the audience.
I disagree with this one, too. And I also I think I've seen a lot of people bashing on Westworld, some TV critics as well. I've seen there's definitely a swell of people who don't like Westworld now, who find that it is pretentious or the out of sequence is done for its own sake and that kind of thing. And so I can't say that there's not a rational, reasonable argument to be made for that, but I can't make it even as a devil's advocate. Like I am dearly in love with the show and the way it's executed. I would not want to change a single thing.
Like, I suck at trying to do the Saturday New York Times crossword, but they can keep making it. It's good. Like, this show's fucking dense, but we just spent almost this entire podcast talking about slow pacing on superhero shows and how 13 episodes just feels like this insanely long slog of like three mini seasons, and Westworld takes 10 episodes and gives me enough like meat to chew on philosophically and just big ideas. And I mean, one of the core things that came about from this season that it really took them a little while to walk me around to, so I really understood, was the central problem here is that doing the Immortality Project in Westworld revealed that we're really fucking simple and have never made a choice in our lives. No matter where you were born, no matter what point you think you started making decisions, you were born a domino falling mid-domino fall.
Yeah, that was a great reveal.
There's always been millions of dominoes behind you that already fell. No matter when you think you started, I'm going to fall, someone else already pushed you. You've never made a clear choice. You've never made a free choice. And how much discovering that fucked William up.
Yeah.
And that is not the central necessarily premise of the show. That's big enough to be its own show. And that was just a thing that kind of formed as I was watching the rest of it, of like, oh crap, I see what all this is adding up to. If you can make a bunch of you, then that means this and this and this. I feel like telling the story the way they did is the same reason that, while, you know, it would be nice sometimes to have the punchline at the start of the joke, it fucks the joke up.
Right.
There's a way to tell this, and I feel like this was it.
I mean, I just think about how many different shows are out now. There are so many shows that all feel derivative of each other. There's a million procedurals. There's so many just, ensemble sitcoms going on now and revivals. And all of these other shows have their place and their platform. Westworld is such a different, unique jewel among all of these shows that if it's not your cup of tea, I get that. Like, maybe it can be a little bit dense, or it's just not a style that you like, but I don't really understand the argument of that shouldn't have its own place on television, or that it should be catering its narrative style in a more direct and packageable way, like a lot of these other shows are already doing. Like, well, let this one be its own creative thing. There's all those other shows out there.
There's also
that spoon feed us the narrative.
There's also a strong argument to be made that for genre TV, the more straightforward it is, the less it works. Everybody talks about how Lost was convoluted and dropped the ball and some interesting things, but did you see every clone of Lost, like flash forward and most recently like The Crossing? They keep trying to do it, but they keep trying to do it by like giving us dumb mysteries and not giving
us... We'll fix the problem. Yeah.
And it doesn't work. The out of sequence is part and parcel of why this works. You have to trust your audience a little bit, and you have to be a little obfuscate a little bit, because if it's too simple, it doesn't work.
Oh.
Yeah, there's not... I don't see another way to have made Westworld.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, You could make a Western show, but I mean, you're going to come out with like Scorpion or Reverie or something.
Yes.
Like, it's not a B Westworld. Like, there's only this way to make this. There's only, like, you can make Legion a different way. It's called Gifted.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Gifted, fine, but the huge shift there is not a matter of like telling the story clearly or not. You've changed audiences by a huge margin.
I agree.
And I feel like Westworld and Legion both catch heavy flack for being needlessly weird. And there's been plenty on television that is needlessly fucking weird, just to throw red herrings at you. But I said this last season, and I feel like it this season too. Westworld and Legion both, but Westworld rewards the time I spent figuring out this world. I felt this way about Sense8. It took me a little while to get into it, but I felt like it rewarded. And I feel like Westworld did the same. There was a moment where I went, you were not dicking me around. This adds up.
The people behind the
show have put thought into it.
Yeah, you know what? The Sense8 comparisons are a really good one, because Sense8, Legion, Westworld, to some extent Atlanta, these are all shows that there's nothing wrong with someone who doesn't like that kind of show. I totally get that where it's like, it is the pay full attention, and it is definitely throwing way more complications at you, and it is not for everyone. And I don't think there's anything wrong.
Like,
but it's not
like picking your NCIS skin.
Right.
I mean, because like there's procedurals that are like video game skins. Like I like my procedural with a Sherlock Holmes skin on it, so I watch Elementary. But these are basically interchangeable shows. Like, what, you know, do you want Cuban American Family, or do you want Modern Family, or do you want, like, what sitcom skin do you want?
Right.
Because these are basically archetype shows that can be swapped out for like, and I guarantee when networks are looking at them, they're like, we want a half hour of Home Improvement type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good, I mean, there is nothing wrong with doing a show traditional. We've loved plenty of traditional shows.
Right.
But I think that the ability to sort of mess around with structure is what often elevates a show above being just good.
Yeah, the reason I'm happy that we've covered this one week to week is because, and we could have done it with Legion too. Like Westworld is a swinging for the fences special. Like I felt the same way about Westworld is more expansive and bugshit crazy to me than Counterpart got. Counterpart was a lot more dour, small John le Carré, but I felt like they were just swinging for the philosophical fences of like, no, y'all sat in a writer's room and did something special. I don't know that it's going to get recognized, but you really made a gem here. Yeah.
I think my favorite part of this question was the complicated storytelling structure designed to appeal to people on Reddit obsessed with solving its mysteries and overanalyzing every episode just to understand the inevitable twists.
Because that's how you watch it.
That's what we do.
Everything about that's true except Reddit. I don't know that I've actually been on Reddit.
I've never been on Reddit, but
we love this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break and then answer a few more of these questions. So we are back with our listener questions. Once a week, Randy puts up a post on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TV Dudes. And we ask for you guys to ask us whatever you want. And people generally do. First question, or this might be a comment. It's from our buddy Alec Miracle. He says, dudes, I'm doing my Game of Thrones rewatch. And tonight I have to watch the infamous Red Wedding. I've seen all of Breaking Bad and Thrones and Lost and Leftovers and 6 Feet Under and Sopranos. And despite The Leftovers being my newly crowned favorite series ever, The Reigns of Castamere still holds the crown for favorite episode of television ever. Excluding The Red Wedding, give me a moment. I'm catching up here. So he asks for us, give me a moment in Game of Thrones that could be part of your top five Game of Thrones moments.
Oh man, I've got one. So when the little kid climbs up the outside of the tower and sees the Sarah Connor from television and her brother having sex, and then he falls, that shit was crazy.
Is that as far as you've gotten in the show?
No, I made it two more episodes.
Oh man!
So I'm gonna go with an unexpected one. I actually love when Sansa and Arya, when Sansa and Arya are finally reunited.
Really?
Because it was such a swerve. The show never gives us those happy moments. So the two of them actually connecting for a moment and being there was like a happy moment. I mean, before they started thinking they might murder each other. When they first connected and Brienne had done her job and brought them together and the two daughters of Stark were together. That was a great moment for me. That for me is one of the best moments of Game of Thrones.
One of the best moments. I don't know. That's a little tricky. It's a show full of great moments.
And also, when Tyrion sees the dragon.
I'm also kind of a little bit nervous to say a specific moment to any listener to spoil things, let alone Alec Miracle, who's probably a little bit earlier in his watching than some of my favorite moments.
He's rewatching.
Oh, he's rewatching. Okay. There's a very particular scene with our lovable Hodor. Character that I found pretty powerful.
I would have too if somebody hadn't spoiled it for me.
Ah, get over it.
You teed that up. You did that on purpose.
You still enjoyed the scene. I don't know why you can't detach yourself from that. Let's argue about spoilers. Because
I can hold a grudge.
Our Patreon.
Because I can hold a grudge, Grant. You know
what? Let's say hold the grudge, Randy.
Oh God damn it! And you know what else? There's a little PS here. Permanent record.
Permanent record. Kyle Volte says, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Expanse, and now Lucifer were all saved from cancellation by other networks or services. Thank you, Randy, for selling your soul. So the question I have is, what shows would you move to other networks to improve them? Or the odds of them staying on the air.
So first, I got to say that Satan does not get my soul because he missed. I don't give a shit about Lucifer coming back, but I wanted Timeless, and it did not get the cut. However, he did miss mentioning both iZombie and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend getting their final season, so I guess maybe I do owe Satan my soul. Whatever. It was worth it. I got some good TV out of it.
I would really probably save the Inhumans.
No. What is wrong with you?
Randy would have to review it, and I'd put it on.
If we're going to save it, it goes to FX and becomes Legion-like, and I'll watch it.
No, I was thinking, like, what? No, it should go to YouTube Red and slow the pacing.
Oh, God.
Oh. It's gonna be on the PlayStation Network.
Anyway,
oh yes, everybody from Power.
Yeah, they just recast it with the people from Powers, and yeah, only the Sony Network could be worse than what ABC did with that show. But other shows that would move networks.
That's the danger of moving networks to save them is like you gotta choose wisely on your network jump, or you change the show. So I mean, we've had a similar question in the past where, like, you know what. What network show recombo would you do, which is basically move everything to FX and watch what happens.
Right, like, except for Terriers. Terriers should go to Netflix.
I think of a show like The Good Place, and I'm constantly nervous that it's not going to get enough ratings. They're not going to renew it. And I love that show, but I feel like for some reason it really does have this NBC charm to it.
Yeah, it does.
If it left there, I feel like, you know, if it were picked up by Netflix, it would be somewhat similar to Arrested Development when it shifted over to Netflix and it no longer had certain restrictions. I feel like that might be a negative for it in some ways.
Maybe IFC.
Yeah, maybe IFC. I don't know.
Less, if Middleman came back, where would you put it?
That's what I was just trying to think. Like, who might take Middleman and really do something crazy with it?
I feel like
a few years ago, Cartoon Network, and it pissed people off. They did two live action shows. They did Tower Prep, and they did one that was basically like a young Indiana Jones-ish thing.
Yeah.
And both of them were fun. They just, people were like legit viscerally angry because, thank you, Internet. That Cartoon Network dared spend money on trying to think who was behind those. I mean, it was pretty good people. But anyway, that they dared spend money on live actors. But I feel like if Cartoon Network was going to make a Middleman is the perfect live action show to be on a network with Cartoon in the name.
Yeah, I can see that.
Jonathan Hupnagel says, "Dear TV Dude Samurai, recently while binging Netflix, I discovered a little gem that I highly recommend." Uh-oh, Randy, what are your odds here that Les has seen this one?
I'm going to say there's actually only a 10% chance Les has watched this one.
Man, he watches everything. All right.
I know.
The show, Les, is called The Hollow. Have you seen it?
I turned it off.
You did watch it.
You did watch it.
It's amazing. Okay.
I have not seen much of it. I will give it another shot because I read this question and he really liked it, and I really did not like the first episode.
Even 10%. Les has seen everything. At least a little bit of it. Anyway, Huffnagel says, The Hollow.
It looked like a cartoon version of Cube. I had to watch it.
The Hollow surprised me with a fun 10-episode mystery. It's like Gravity Falls with sprinkles of Lost and Dark Matter on top. Just avoid the trailer as there are some spoilers that are more delightful if you don't know they are coming. Maybe it's already on your roster. Either way, it'd be fun to hear your thoughts on it if you give it a try. I was also able to finally watch Samurai Jack from start to finish for the first time. What a fantastic smorgasbord of genre, diverse storytelling, and jaw-dropping art design and cinematography. The only thing comparable to me is Cowboy Bebop. When I got to season 5, I was pleasantly rewarded like a fabulous dessert at the end of a fantastic dinner. I checked your previous episodes from last year, but I couldn't find anything saying you've covered it. There are many fantastic things I enjoyed, but I am itching to hear your thoughts.
You know, I just want to talk about, in general, animated shows. I think, in general, the three of us are not big animated show guys. Grant, you're probably the most of the three of us who've watched the most of the animated stuff.
I don't think so. I mean, Venture, you guys, Brothers, like, watch Voltron or whatever.
But Venture Brothers?
I watch Venture Brothers. Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, yeah. Yeah, Venture Brothers is coming back, which I haven't seen. At some point I should watch. I watched the first season of Samurai Jack way back when it was first on, and liked it, but I remember feeling like there was a premise there and there was a story, but instead it was sort of Tartakovsky doing little funny one-offs where there was no like ongoing thread. And so I didn't stick with it to see if the story actually developed into anything. And it's not on Hulu or anything. It's nowhere to be found. So I'm not likely to watch it unless they make it where I can watch it. But that's kind of where I fell on The Hollow too. Like The Hollow, you Gravity Falls plus Lost in Dark Matter sounds interesting, but I didn't even watch Gravity Falls. Like I watched bits and pieces of it, but my animated TV watching is really, really low. Like it's got to be something. I mean, I'm three seasons behind on Voltron, which I really like, and it's a style of TV that I just don't watch as much of.
Yeah, I really liked Samurai Jack, but I don't keep up with long form animated shows as much as I used to. I think I watched Young Justice, but Jenny Tartakovsky I absolutely loved. One of the last Star Wars things that I really enjoyed was his Clone Wars
that
run,
is
which
great.
Is not
yeah.
I just loved. I'm not super keen on CG, so when they relaunched it as a CG Clone Wars, I wasn't as interested. But I really liked his, and I really liked Samurai Jack. But same, like most of my memories of Samurai Jack are more goofy one-off. It's like really came back and dove straight into the mythology.
Yeah.
But the stuff from the comeback, if you didn't see it pick back up, it's pretty astonishing.
Okay.
All right, one last question, and it's from our fearless leader of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric sweater.
There you go.
You left me hanging on that.
I can't do it. I can't do it. We don't know where the timing is.
Mike Moody says, y'all should check out Vita on Stars. As a Latinx dude, I find it incredibly uplifting to see characters that look, act, and speak like Mexican-American women and men I know and grew up with. And it's also encouraging to see a show that depicts a wide variety of Latinx experiences and lifestyles. I'd love to know what you think of it. P.S. Fuck Kyle.
That's a shot at Kyle out of nowhere. I saw the showrunner and the music producer at ATX Fest, and I was very impressed with them both. And it definitely put the show on my radar, but I don't watch Stars. Like there's just not, I watched American Gods, but it's one of those things where it's like, give me a show I can find easily. I'll watch it, but I'm not going out of my way to watch it.
Yeah. I remember seeing this. I think it just started just as we were dropping Stars after Counterpart. And I currently just don't have a way to watch it easily.
Whenever we do pick best Stars back up, if we do, I will definitely give it a shot. 'Cause I think it's only 6 episodes.
Yeah. Let's add it to the roster.
And I'm definitely interested in checking it out.
All right, guys.
Yep. The constant juggling of the streaming networks.
That is the problem. I mean, you guys watched everything this week. I watched Westworld and talked about it. Talk about phoning it in. It's not just for less. All right, guys. We are going to wrap things up there. We will be back next week for, I don't even know, like, if I'm not watching Westworld and I'm not going to watch any other shows.
You're going to watch Glow. You got to watch Glow.
We're the TV dudes, and I'm just going to be the dude who doesn't even watch TV. Maybe I'll watch some Glow. All right, we'll be back next week, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and until then,
TV dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener-supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TVDudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.